no matter what the stats may say, and the experts may think, and the commentators may have predicted, when the race is on, all bets are off. Don't be surprised if somebody decides to flip the script and take a pass on yelling uncle. And then suddenly, as the old saying goes, we got ourselves a game.
This is Trusting the Process.
Hey, thanks for hopping into the first edition of Trusting the Process. I am your host, Ty Richardson. And I've been listening to a lot of long-form podcasts lately, and this was an opportunity that I found that no one else was doing. There's so many media members within the state of Arkansas, and big air quotations around Arkansas media members, because that term is going to be used very loosely as we interview certain people who don't necessarily fit that criteria. But I think this is going to be awesome. We're going to dive into a number of different things with the different interviewees that I get a chance to talk to. And the first one I'm really excited to announce is Richard Davenport of Whole Hog Sports in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, covers recruiting for all those outlets. Richard, I really appreciate you making some time for us today, and I'm excited about to go on this journey with you, brother.
Hey, man, I appreciate you inviting me to be on, Ty, and I'm excited too.
So we've developed a friendship over the last couple of years, me working here at ESPN Arkansas, you've been a part of the Morning Rush for quite some time. And before we get into more of the serious stuff, I found that you enjoy my affinity for food. And we'll talk sports all the time, like most guys do. But the food conversations that we've had on and off air and just through social media, I thought have been hysterical. Richard, could you pinpoint exactly when your metabolism went to you know what? Like when was the last time you couldn't eat what you actually wanted to eat?
Oh gosh. Metabolism probably slowed down probably in the 40s to where I had to watch what I ate. Before then I was able to kind of throw it down and not have to worry about my weight, but now that's not the case, obviously.
I keep hearing from people, not just weekly now, but on a daily basis, hey, you won't be able to do that forever. You won't be able to do that forever. I'm kind of just holding out, but we'll have to wait and see. Richard, I think one of the other things that I really connected with you really strong up front is I don't post a lot of sentimental or emotional stuff on my social media. Most of it's food, sports, pop culture. But I did post a picture of my mom's gravesite. And I do this once a year, her birthday, and when she passed away is in June, so I try and go see her around then. And we kind of formed an emotional connection with our mothers. Your mother passed away in 2008, and you didn't even know mine had passed away. So it was I immediately was taken aback and appreciated that you reaching out and touched more. And I know you've written about it. We'll start there because both my mom and your mom have meant a great deal to our lives. What did Mrs. Betty Jean mean to Richard Davenport?
Oh, boy. You know, I have to kind of compose myself because, you know, when you think about, you know, your parents, especially when they're gone, you kind of bring back memories. But make a long story short, what my mom taught me when I was throughout my life, especially as a kid, she taught me a hard work ethic. She taught me respect people of all backgrounds, all races. She taught me a tough mental attitude. I was raised by a single mom, obviously, and she raised me and my four sisters. And being the lone boy in the family, and without a father figure, she did not want me to be soft. And she always she didn't put up with much, and I appreciate that. And now, I mean, I appreciated it then, and I knew I was loved even when she was being tough on me. But I remember coming home one time, flipped over on my bicycle and I had blood from my forehead coming down. And I ran into the house and she looked at me, and I say this to my wife a lot. And whenever times are tough, her favorite saying whenever I would wanted, I guess, sympathy or something. She would just look at me and say, "You'll live." And I'll never forget that. I mean, she didn't, and this is politically incorrect in today's society, but in her words back then, she didn't want me to be a sissy. And I was definitely not soft. And she just, another thing as far as work ethic, she told me, unless you're on your deathbed, you go to work. And that's something that I'd like to think that that I exhibit is work ethic and toughness, and but also having a soft heart too for people that are going through some tough times. And she definitely had that. And she whatever good I possess, it's from her.
You just brought up so many things that I want to unpack there, Richard. And I'll start with the phrase, the particular phrase that you can remember to this day. My dad's was, "Life's not fair." And I think in today's society, you mentioned like being called a sissy is not politically incorrect. To me, that's just life, man. And so I wonder from your vantage point, from your perspective, now you've got some years on me, but I try, when it comes to talking about the millennial generation, which I'm a part of, or Generation Z, which is right behind me, I don't know if there's another one to this point, if it's been labeled, but do you think that parents and really the kids themselves, it's more on the kids, I think, than anything. Do you think that we're raising a soft generation within the United States, or generations for that matter?
I think we do, but I don't think it's necessarily, I don't necessarily blame it on the kids or that generation. I blame it on my generation of parents and a little, and younger parents that were raised with tough love, and they didn't raise their kids the same way. They were much softer, and I just tend to think that parents have changed and their expectations. Now, there's still some parents out there, and don't get me wrong, not all parents are bad. I'm not saying that. I think you have a fewer percentage of parents that have that tough love mentality, but that still obviously love their kids to death. But I think that you have a greater percentage of parents nowadays that, kind of let things slide. Where, when they were growing up, things that maybe they're letting their kids slide with weren't something that their parents let them get by with. But I really blame it more on the parents than I do the kids, because I still run into some parents that have old school mentality, and I'm not going to lie to you, it's refreshing. And I tell them that, especially some of the parents that I get close to, some of the current parents of the Razorbacks now, and they'll tell you that. I'll text them in the middle of the night and say, "Man, thanks for raising a son the way that you did."
God willing, I'll get married someday, Richard. And I was spanked as a kid. I hope that my wife and I will see eye to eye when it comes to spanking our children, because that was something that I learned a valuable, painful lesson many times from my parents. Now, I felt like I was a pretty good kid. Maybe my father could tell me that. But single parenthood is taxing and tough on anyone. It doesn't matter how dynamite of a father or a mother you are. It's just, there's an element missing. And you without a father figure, me without a mother figure for a period of time. Richard, just from what you lived through with Mrs. Betty Jean, what advice would you give for the single parents out there?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Just, if you're a single mom, try to expose the kids to a father figure, somebody in the family that you really respect. And I'm sure that in a lot of ways that's happening. If you're a single dad, parent dad, obviously you want some, motherly attention or love towards your children too, and a lot of that comes from other female family members. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one, but that's just something off the top of my head.
This is Trusting the Process. Our guest is Richard Davenport of Whole Hog Sports in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Richard, my dad's the best man I ever known. I love to talk with him weekly. I called him in 2020 and asked him, hey, do you want me to call you every night? And we just kind of had this conversation, laid it out. He's like, no, I don't know what we talk about every day. Now, we text all the time. We're passing messages through Twitter. We'll talk on the phone probably 2 to 3 times a week. You had a relationship with your late mom where you guys talked on the phone every single night, late at night before she went to bed. Do you remember, and I know, and again, this might be a little emotional. I get emotional when I talk about my mom. Do you remember kind of the last few conversations that you had with your mom?
I remember that, excuse me, that last night before she had a heart attack and eventually passed. Yeah, I remember that. And you know, it's something that I don't remember the total conversation or anything like that, but I do remember that night.
Yeah, and Richard, I like my night was just thrown into a blur because, I mean, I was 7 years old, and you can't fully comprehend what's going on when your parents tell you that your mom has cancer. And I was actually, man, kind of speaking to her last night, my last night, I'd come back from a friend's birthday party, and my dad and my brother were kind of silent in the car. I didn't know what was going on, and I walked into a bunch of my parents' friends, and it's just, it's so tough to tell anyone. And obviously, you being at your age and me being at mine, when you lose your mom, when you lose that person in your life, I don't fully think it's explainable to understand and to really process what you've lost. And kind of on that note, I as much as possible, I try to think about her. Her a couple of her college pictures are on my phone. Richard, I mentioned earlier, I try and go see her about once a year. Her and Matt Zimmerman went to the same high school in St. Vincent. And I'll try and go see her, leave flowers, go out with my grandma, mamaw. Do you, some people do this differently. Do you go back and see your mom once a year? How do you go about doing that, ma'am? Cause I know how valuable she was to your life.
Let me just say, you know, when people such as yourself tell me that they lost a parent at such an early age, I cannot imagine, because I had my mom. I was blessed to have my mom for 40-something years, so I just can't imagine that. But, you know, I went to her gravesite only once since she passed, because, you know, I'm a believer, and I don't believe, you know, obviously that was her final resting place, but she's no longer there. So I haven't been back since, which, to be honest with you, I'm not so sure, you know, I would probably be the way I am right now, yeah, as far as, you know, just not being able to hold it together. But at the same time, I just feel like that she's no longer there. She's in a better place. So I haven't done that, but I totally understand why other people would.
And to your point, Richard, there's no right or wrong way after a family member passes. It doesn't just have to be a mom. I know some people that go a couple times a year, some like myself trying to make it out once a year. You mentioned you've gone once. There's no right way of doing things, and it's just kind of how we react. Richard, We've talked a little bit, and I know with Mrs. Betty Jean, just you growing up, there were obviously single parenthood, especially as a single mother, there comes financial challenges. What was that like? You had 4 sisters. Where did you grow up? And just what was your livelihood like growing up at an early age?
We lived near Little Rock Central when I was, age 2 to 5, something like that. And then we moved near Little Rock Parkview off of off of Barrow Road, and lived there for quite some time. And I just remember, you know, hey, we didn't have much, but we were able to eat every night, which is a blessing. And you know, we made do with what we had, but you know, obviously, you know, a single parent and one income raising five kids, you had your limitations. And I remember going to McDonald's. Wow, that was huge. I mean, if you went to McDonald's, you told everybody in the neighborhood, "I'm going to McDonald's this afternoon, tonight," or something like that. I mean, that was just a huge deal. And I remember going to the Old Shack barbecue when I was a kid, and we couldn't get a beef barbecue sandwich because we always had to get a pork sandwich because it was a nickel more. And just small things like that where, you know, I wouldn't trade that for I'd rather be raised like that, because your appreciation for things and you I think are so much greater. And most of the people that I've talked to, especially in my generation, that have come from you know, backgrounds you know, much worse off than me as far as financially, and they wouldn't change a thing, because it shapes you, and you learn from those experiences, and you just look back and think, you know, life is not all about material things. It's about family, and it's about friendships and things of that nature.
Richard, I had never had a sister before, and then all of a sudden, in probably the most awkward stage of my entire life in middle school, I'm gifted three stepsisters. Now, I feel like step a lot of times has a bad connotation to it. I think of them more as sisters than stepsisters because of close, especially my younger one, Summer, who were really close. Being with four sisters, being really the man at the house at the time, what was your relationship like with your sisters, and where did you fit in? Were you middle? Were you youngest, oldest? I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, that's all right. I was a baby, so they bossed me around when mom was she was on second or third shift at Teletype, which was turned into AT&T, the factory off of I-30. Boy, they bossed me around quite a bit. I got into trouble when mom got home sometimes when I didn't do what my sisters told me. But you know, I guess my appreciation for you know, single moms and just women in general is a very high level, because I've seen my sisters go through some struggles and you know, overcome. And I think in a large part, women are probably, you know, stronger than men in a lot of ways. And I guess because of my upbringing and being around mostly just women, I was exposed to a lot of strong women in my family.
Richard, you mentioned physical struggles, spiritual struggles, mental struggles, and also you brought up financial struggles. I went to Terry Elementary grades kindergarten through third, and then I transferred to Little Rock Christian. And the thing about going to a private school is you're in a bubble, and you start to assume that everyone has the financial means you do, whether you know if that's true or not. And I think what was beneficial for me going to the U of A is there was more of a wide base, and that was important. I think what makes you so good at your job, outside of just being an awesome dude, is you have the ability with kind of the financial stuff you were talking about growing up, that you can connect with a lot of these kids that are kind of going through maybe these situations. Do you think that's been a big beneficial factor, that you experience a lot of things that maybe these same kids are going through as they're going through the recruiting process?
Yeah, some of the, you know, let's face it, most of the kids that I talk to, I don't know what the percentage is, but quite a few of them don't have a father figure, being raised by a single mom, and I can relate to that, and, you know, and and what they're missing, you know, growing up and not having a male figure that they could really rely on. And, you know, when I see a kid, I guess, you know, do something kind of crazy on Twitter, and then I know that, you know, if I have a good relationship with them, I'll DM them and say, you know, you may want to take that off. It's, you know, and I'll tell them why. And as long as they know that you're coming from a caring side and know that that you're really looking out for them, most of the time the kids listen, and they'll clean things up, delete a tweet or just something that they're dealing with. Obviously, I don't try to be a parent to them because I don't want to over, you know, kind of overrule what, you know, their mom or dad are saying, but you know, I'll give them advice that maybe they need to listen to from a different party.
Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
You're listening to Trusting the Process.
Richard Davenport is our guest on Season 1, Episode 1 of Trusting the Process. Richard, in a sense, and it's not for all these kids, but in a sense, you kind of act like a father figure to some. And being raised by a single mom, just as I was raised by a single dad for a good portion of my childhood, you don't necessarily get the other side sometimes. Now, you mentioned your mom didn't want you to be a sissy growing up, which I think is important, especially as a young man in today's day and age or back then. But you and I have discussed off there that you felt like there were some areas that you maybe didn't develop in because you didn't have that father figure. And there are some areas that I didn't develop in because I didn't have a mother figure. When you're talking to these young men, and you talked about percentages earlier. I don't know what the percentage is on the ones that have dads or a strong father figure or just a strong parental figure in their life. What aspect does that play in when you're having these recruiting conversations with these young men?
Well, you know, you can not always, but you can kind of, you know, see after, you know, a few conversations, some kids that, you know, are maybe a little less developed socially and academically in other areas. And you can kind of guess that maybe they come from a single parent household, and that's not always the case, because there's a lot of great kids and sharp kids that I talk to that come from single parent households. But you know, you do notice a few things that are a little different in some cases where a two parent household kid has got the advantages over maybe a kid that doesn't have that.
Yeah. I found this really interesting. You've come across to me every conversation we've had, on air, off air, as a really chill guy. And Richard, I had so much built up frustration over the years after my mom died. And I was so angry at my stepmom and my three stepsisters. They weren't doing anything wrong, but I felt like that my stepmom was replacing my mom. And whenever I looked at my stepsisters, they were just another part of my stepmom replacing my mom. And that wasn't the case at all. She was just trying to be there for me. And people deal with death, especially death at early childhood, in a variety of ways, or not having a certain figure in your life. It was weird to me that you told me you had temper issues back in the day. And that's just so odd, because you're like the most chill, low-key, easygoing guy that I've met. Just kind of, what was Richard Davenport struggling with back in the day, and just kind of explain to our audience maybe how you were different 30, 40 years ago.
I think it probably came to a head when I was, I don't know, age 17, 18 to about 25, you know, especially say 20 to 23, when you get out and you start doing, you know, being more more of an adult versus a kid, you know, in high school and all that, and you're having to make decisions and you're having to deal with adversity and being told no or things not going your way. And I didn't handle a lot of things very well. I wasn't a bad person. I was very immature in the way I handled things. And sometimes I would lose my temper. And make a long story short, it got to the point where I could see myself getting in trouble with my temper. And at the time, I was dating a young lady when I was about 23, 24. And I got to meet her dad and got to know him. And he happened to be the chaplain out at Tucker Prison. And his name is John Hagen. And he realized that I was struggling with my temper, and my girlfriend at the time said, "Why don't you let my dad counsel you?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm for that." And we were talking one time, and it only took like this first session. And I talked to him several times, but that first session really kind of got me going in the right direction. He said, "Richard, when you lose your temper, do you get your way?" And I was, man, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I instantly said to myself, no, it just complicates things. I mean, you just make a situation much worse. And when he said that, that kind of changed everything in my head. It wasn't something that changed overnight, but it was a process of going from not being able to process adversity and dealing with it in a good way, in a productive way. But it definitely got me going in the right direction. And he was probably the first, you know, father figure that I really truly had that, you know, helped me tremendously. I owe him so much because I don't know where I would be today if it wasn't for him. And, we broke up. My girlfriend and I broke up probably after two years of dating. And I think later on, I don't know when it was, a few years later, I called Mr. Hagen and just told him how much I appreciated him. And I was just thinking about him recently. And I was able to find his number. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know if he was still with us or not. But he's 90 years old and he's still in good health. And I called him and told him who I was, and he remembered me and just reminded him how much of a, you know, difference he made in my life. And that was a big moment in my life because I was definitely struggling.
That's a cool story. And I think sometimes, Richard, when it comes to advice from a parental figure or a parent itself, it takes years and years for you to truly fully appreciate that. So it was cool that you got to connect. Richard, you brought up faith earlier, man. And when that gets thrown around, obviously, as a Christian, there's certain people that look down upon that or whatever. But it's a big deal. Now, I go about things differently than maybe you do. My dad's the godliest man I've ever known. He doesn't drink excessively. He doesn't swear. He used to be angry at times, which I understood because he was a single dad and had a lot of stress. But, I mean, I can't think of, like, a struggle that he goes through on a daily basis. And, I mean, me, like, I'm the opposite. Like, I drink too much on the weekends. I swear profusely. I do stuff a lot of times that I shouldn't. I'm kind of an on-off reading my Bible devotional. In this industry and just over the course of your career, what has your faith meant to you?
Quite a bit. It really started in my early 20s, and when I met Mr. Hagen, you know, I saw a very godly man, and I just noticed that there was a difference with him versus most other people. And then I got to going to church and, you know, being around more faithful people and just noticing that, you know, man, these people seem to have it together. And you know, I started, you know, getting more into the Bible and stuff and getting wisdom. And that kind of helped the process of me becoming growing into an adult. And I don't attend church on a regular basis, but I definitely, you know, try to remember biblical principles and try not to, maybe be struggling with something, and I always always try to think back, how would Jesus handle this? You know, or just try to remember the biblical principles that I learned over the years, and try to apply them, and usually things work out, not overnight or anything like that, but kind of keeps you going and gets you through some tough times.
This is Trusting the Process. Richard Davenport is our first guest, episode 1 of season 1. Richard, you brought up struggles. Is anger still your biggest struggle?
No, it's not. I think life experience, you realize that, I think for the most part, I let things, roll off, kind of like, what do they say? Rain, off the duck's back or whatever. I don't know what to say. I can't remember what I still got a little bit of a temper. Don't get me wrong, and I still have to pray about things, especially when you're done wrong or something's going the direction that you don't like. But I think I do a good job of processing things and not letting it get to me, because another thing, as you get older, you realize that some of the things that you thought was so important is really, really not. Health, family, and just being around good people, and that's what really matters.
Richard, we spoke a lot of your kind of early childhood, and you mentioned your relationship with the pastor that kind of changed your life. I was doing research for this and talking with different people. I also just kind of got on your Facebook page and was screwing around. And, man, I saw this picture of you in high school that I laughed at. And I just got to ask, what were you like in high school? Like if Richard Davenport and Ty Richardson went to high school together in the – was that the 70s or –
It was the late 70s, and I graduated in 81. I would have been one of those people that I had a lot of fun, and it hurt my GPA. I obviously won't say some of the things I did back then, but some of the guys I hung around with, we'll talk and we'll say, you know what, we're kind of lucky that we're still alive, because we did some crazy things. And that's why I can kind of understand why kids make bad choices today, and I try not to jump on the negative vibes and things that people throw at some kids when they make a mistake. And I just know some of the stupid things that I did when I was young, and I learned from, and I know that kids today will do the same thing, and hopefully it's not something that it's a long lasting situation that kind of affects them.
Yeah, considering yours truly got arrested his first week into school, I know exactly what you're talking about. And speaking of Arkansas, you have a really good piece. And I feel like it was kind of a deep emotional dive into how much your mom meant to you. But you also have that post of my mother pinned to your account. And Richard, I don't know if you remember or how deeply you remember your first Razorback game, and I don't remember mine, but I mean, the Arkansas Razorbacks have been a massive part of my life. I'm a fifth generation Razorback. What do you remember about your first Razorback game?
It was 1972. It was North Texas State, and now they're North Texas. And I remember walking into War Memorial Stadium. And back then, I was 9 years old. I walked in, and I'll be honest with you, it was one of the greatest moments of my life. I just remember walking in and being able to see the field, and I was just so in awe. It was almost, it was just amazing. Back then, you only had one game on a week nationally, and there was most of the games were just on radio, and to be able to see one in person was just incredible, because I grew up, I guess my first year I really remember is 1969, and I remember being 6 years old and watching the big shootout and Texas beating Arkansas 15-14, and being in my rocking chair and crying, and my mom sent me to my room. I just remember, I know how important the Razorbacks are to the state, and because I lived it, and I grew up a fan, and there's so many memories, and that's what our Kansans embrace. They embrace the Razorbacks and the good times and the bad times, but some of the great times is some of the greatest times in my life, because the Razorbacks bring so much joy to the state, and when they do something pretty remarkable, like winning the national championship or some of the great football victories, it really is a great, great feeling.
So you reside in Little Rock. That's where I grew up, going to War Memorial games, and Miracle on Markham, too. So many great memories inside of that stadium. And when Matt Jones threw that pass to DeCorey Birmingham in 2002, and I was in that portion of the end zone where DeCorey caught the football, I knew right then and there, 6 or 7 years old at the time, that I wanted to be involved with sports somehow because of the feeling I had at that specific moment. Now, the Hogs have done things to me that have, even at 20-something years old, I felt like I was going to have a heart attack. Was it that moment at your first game or watching the 69 shootout? When did you know you wanted to be involved with sports in your career?
Oh, gosh, probably. I don't know exactly when, but, sports were, sports were everything to me growing up. I played every sport there was. Back when I was a kid, you woke up, especially during the summer, and you were out playing at 7 a.m. and you didn't finish till the lights came off. And my mom would say, it's time for dinner. I didn't want to go in for dinner. So I was either playing football, baseball, basketball. In the back of my mind, I always thought, it'd be neat to be involved in sports. I always thought I was going to be a professional baseball player. I was pretty good in baseball growing up, but I didn't, and this is another area where, I can relate to kids. I didn't have the work ethic. I thought I was so good, I didn't have to work, and it obviously caught up with me. And that's why I kind of can, talk to guys nowadays or young ladies and just say, hey, you got to want it. You just got to work your butt off at all times and to get to where you want to go. I'm not saying I would ever got it to the major leagues or anything like that, but who knows what could happen if I would have had a great work ethic. And that's just something that, one of those life regrets, I guess you could say.
What position did you play, Richard?
I was a pitcher and played just about every position, but mainly pitcher. But had a football injury early on that screwed up my left knee. That I really think if I could have been a catcher, but because of my knee, I could catch, but. Having longevity at that position wouldn't have been something I could have done. But I think that might have been my best position because I had such a strong arm and I could have been a good defensive catcher. But, obviously the bat would have to come in involved in that area to go beyond, American Legion High School and stuff like that. But That was my best sport. I played football too, but baseball was my best.
Two thoughts real quick. In the time that we've spent together so far, and again, this is Trusting the Process, Richard Davenport, Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Whole Hog Sports, is our guest, Season 1, Episode 1. You've told me two things. You used to struggle with anger issues, and you're like the most chill guy ever, and you said you didn't have a good work ethic in high school, and all I know is you bust your tails. You did an interview with us on your vacation, man. Like, it's crazy to me, not just how much you've changed, but how much we all change over the years and over time.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, if you don't learn each and every day, I mean, you have to be humble and realize that you don't know it all. And I think in my 20s, I butted my head up against the wall many a times because I wouldn't listen to people. As I started to listen to people, and they're people with better, more life experience and much more wisdom, life became much easier when I listened to people. And I always paid attention to people that were successful and watched them and how they conducted themselves personally and professionally. And I tried to do some of that. And so, it's a process. I mean, we go through life, and I'm still learning how to adjust and to be I hope to be a better person, because the bottom line is what's your position, how much money you make, or anything like that. It's really not that important. It's about the people that you're around, and maybe you can help influence and help encourage when they go through tough times. And it's life is always about evolving and learning.
Richard, considering the way people talk about you in a fine manner, I'd say that you've conducted yourself exactly how you described growing up.
Now, what are you going to do?
You're listening to Trusting the Process.
I've known you as the recruiting guy for quite some time. It's seemingly growing up and being an out of Arkansas. You're the guru, you're the expert, but everyone has to have a start. Everyone has to pay their dues at a certain point. Where did you start in sports, man?
Well, actually, it was kind of a hobby. I started doing recruiting for Hogville, and I just started doing that and got a decent following, and I'd known Wally Hall for a few years, he was looking for somebody to do recruiting, and I approached him. And make a long story short, that's how it started for me.
Isn't that sometimes weird that that's all it takes, is just to talk to someone? Like, I think back to the job opportunities I had in college and just kind of early on. I emailed Bart Pullman about an internship with Bo Mattingly. I emailed our student radio station program director at the time about doing a show. I mean, I think, Richard, sometimes people are just scared to take that initial step. What encouragement would you have for them? I mean, you look at your career is a perfect example. For someone listening right now that's maybe just a little worried to take that next step, what advice would you have for them?
Go for it. Don't take no. There's going to be some times when it doesn't look like that you're going to be able to achieve your goal. Keep plugging along, be persistent. Don't take no for an answer. If you get no, go back a few months later or weeks later or whatever time frame you think is good to banging on that door and until they give you that opportunity or if you can't get in, at a place that you'd like to start off at, and find some place that you can. I mean, I went. I first really started doing UCA recruiting for the Conway Log Cabin, and that kind of got my feet wet a little bit, and that kind of got me a little bit of a resume. And then that's when I was able to go to the Democrat Gazette and had somewhat of a background that I could show them that I could do the job. So and also you never know who might be able to help you, network with as many people as you can, and just be persistent.
I got this job because of connections, Richard. Nick Mason, John Neighbors were 90-something percent of the reason I got this job. And connections, you nail it on the head. You're exactly right. You brought up someone polarizing. Now, I read Richard Davenport recruiting. I read Clay Henry Hogs Illustrated because that's what my grandpa, he had a subscription. And then Mr. Wallace Hall. Now, I love Wally Hall. I will always read his column, won't always agree with it, but he has been a part of my life since I could read, because I was always reading the Arkansas Democrat Gazette with my dad. He'd always give me the paper because he knew how much I adored it. How has Wally Hall helped you through your career? And I feel like you can tell me if I'm wrong about this. I feel like people either love Wally Hall and would go to war for him, or they dislike him too. I feel like there's no in between, but Richard, how has Wally Hall helped your career?
Well, obviously, he gave me the big chance, and he's always had my back. He was there when I lost my mom, and he was supportive. I don't have any gripes about him being my boss. I mean, he lets me do my job, and he's always had my back. And if you have a job and you have a boss that exhibit those qualities, that's really all you want. You want an opportunity. You want somebody to have your back. And if I do something that's not good, hey, I don't have a problem with hearing about that. But there's been few and far between those instances. Can't be honest with you. Can't really think of many, but he's been good to me.
Richard, you brought up kind of growing your brand at Hogville. I want you to compare the newspaper industry then to now. I know Whole Hog Sports has really blossomed, and there's been a variety of influx of social media, internet, just reading articles like that. How much has changed since you first got in the industry to now in 2021?
Well, it's so much more internet driven, obviously, and breaking news, and the focus. I mean, obviously now the Arkansas Democrat Gazette only prints one copy a week, and that's on Sundays because we've gone digital, which that you always knew the future news organizations like the Arkansas Democrat Gazette was going to be digital, but we're one of the pioneers in that, and so really the focus is all, for the most part, is all on the internet and the digital digital process. But it's definitely changed, we're pretty much still the same. It's just the focus is mostly on digital.
Richard, you've done recruiting for quite some time, and the great thing about you is you're a Swiss Army knife. I could ask you really any question about Razorback sports, not just recruiting, and you can answer it. Did you ever at any point in your career want to get out the specific aspect of recruiting, writing, or talking about recruiting on the radio? Has that ever appealed to you, peeling out from that specific part?
Say that again. I don't know if I'm understood.
So, like, recruiting, you're working 60, 70 hours during around National Signing Day, and it's a very time-consuming job. And I wonder from your vantage point and your perspective, did you ever feel like that you wanted to change within sports journalism, like change to just become a beat writer or change to become just a full-time radio host? Did that ever appeal to you at all?
No, not really. I really enjoy the relationships with the kids, the parents, the high school coaches. I enjoy getting to know the Razorback coaches. There's so many relationships I've built through the years with, people as far as the players, the parents, the high school coaches, Razorback coaches, and still stay in touch with so many of them. And the friendships that you've developed, they're pretty special, and you get to meet some pretty amazing people. And it's pretty inspiring to be able to reach out to them and still connect with them.
Richard, one of the great experiences that you got to partake in was Recruiting Thursday. Now, this lasted a decade plus, and there are so many different players, so many different coaches, so many fans of that program. When was the first Recruiting Thursday? And Richard, when did you know it was going to become a massive success?
I think we started in 2007. And be honest with you, it was just a weekly. I don't know. You know, it was about an hour long. It was the show, Sean and Wally show, and Sean thought, you know, hey, let's do this an hour every Thursday, and then we started calling it Recruiting Thursday, and then started doing it myself for a period of time. And it was just another opportunity to talk to the kids and let the fans get to know the kids a little bit more in depth through 15-20 minute interviews, and always would try to be a little different and ask them personal questions and things of that nature. But it started in 2007 and around 2007 and then after a while, I realized, hey, this is not a bad thing. Let's keep doing it.
How did it grow your brand?
Well, it became a weekly show, I think fans enjoyed, listening, and it helped me, connect with the kids a little bit more, and helped those relationships. And any time that you're able to be on radio or TV or whatever, and in the later years the show was I wouldn't say statewide, but the majority of the state had an opportunity to listen to it. So that definitely helped.
So between the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, between Recruiting Thursday, between coming on the Morning Rush and other radio stations, Richard, what other work have you done in this industry? I named off a bunch of things. Am I missing anything, man?
No, not really. That's enough. That's enough. Especially when Twitter came along, that changed the game. It's basically 15, 16, 17, 18 hours a day. You have to be paying attention to Twitter, and so that's enough.
You bring up Twitter, and if you want to just kind of put Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat in a bucket, social media and technology, do you think it's helped or hurt your career?
Oh, it's definitely helped. Before social media, you had to call coaches and try to get a kid's number, or you had to reach out to other guys that do recruiting. I mean, Tom Lemming's been a great person to work with over the years. He obviously travels the nation and sees probably just about every kid in the country. He'd help me with numbers, people in different states that do what I do. I'd reach out to them, Florida, South Carolina, Texas. Yeah, I don't know how many states I have connections, because sometimes I don't know it until I have to look at my phone and and look at it and say, oh, okay, this is a guy I used to talk to in Ohio or something. And that's now you can just follow a kid and a lot of times get numbers that way. But you can interact with them and, you know, through DMs. And so it's made it easier.
Richard, this podcast is called Trusting the Process for a reason. I want to explore within different Arkansas media members, specifically sports, kind of what has led them to this point, just the process of getting there, which I think we've done a good job so far. Is this 30, 40 years ago, is this what you envisioned your life would be? Did the process pay off? All the hard work, all the extra effort, all the long hours you spent. Is this where you want to be in your life?
Yeah, I look at it. Sometimes I still pinch myself because, you know, growing up and watching the Razorbacks the Razorbacks when I was a kid, they were bigger than life. I mean, especially the players and stuff like that. To be able to talk to the kids and follow a team that I grew up rooting for, I pinch myself sometimes. And even though I've been doing it for a while, I still, you know, tell myself how blessed I am because I get to work from home. My two dogs get to hang out with me and I get to hang out with them and get to work from home and write about a team that I followed as a kid. So I'm pretty blessed.
That's how I look at it, man. I want to act like a kid in a candy store every day. I mean, I listen to sports radio from the moment I could hear things. And so to be in this position I am, that's kind of how you have to look at it. RD, real quick, what are your dog's names, buddy?
Sam, he's a Maltipoo. He's we got Reuben. He's kind of a Heinz 57, a mix of a bit of everything. But I love them both. You know how it is. Dogs, they bring so much joy to you, and they're a blessing.
I'll tell you what else brings joy to someone's life is their significant other. And I don't know a lot about Mrs. Megan, your wife. When did you first meet her, Richard?
First met her.
Got to remember this, man. Years. This is, she might listen to this part.
Well, it was at Hot Springs Village. I used to play a ton of golf. I basically lived on the golf course. I was so ate up with golf and ran into her there. And I would probably say that was about 25 years ago, 25, 26 years ago. So that's where we met.
Do you ever hit a hole in one, Richard?
You know, I have not. I've hit the pin several times, but I have not. I don't think I've even gotten a double eagle. I don't think. I don't play as much as I used to. But I was ate up with it back then.
See, I set you up perfectly, man. You should have said, "Yeah, when I married my wife Megan." I was trying to lead you into that, dude.
Well, I'm obviously not smart enough to figure that one out.
So a couple more questions before we wrap down here. Richard, I don't know how much longer you're wanting to do this. I don't know if you have a timeline laid out. It's kind of funny to talk with different people about when they anticipate they want to retire. Do you have an age? Do you have a year in mind that you want to call it quits and just kind of relax a little bit?
I'm sure I will at some point, but I don't know if I'll continue to do this indefinitely, even when I do kind of slow down, but I just don't see myself not doing, just totally, quitting work. And I could see myself maybe going part-time doing this, but, or maybe doing something else part-time, but I don't ever see myself in a rocking chair. I think I'll always be active and in some form or fashion and, you know, whatever I may do after I retire, but don't really have a time frame right now, to be honest with you.
Richard, based on what you were talking about with golf, when you do either go part-time or you do fully retire, I'm just going to assume that you and Mrs. Megan retire somewhere that's near a bunch of golf courses or near a ninth golf course. Is there a specific area, whether in Arkansas or outside of the state, that you and Mrs. Megan would like to retire?
Probably won't be a golf course, even though we have property in Hot Springs Village. It's not on the golf course, but I always thought that I would retire there. But as time has gone on, I realize that's not going to happen. Really haven't totally discussed. I figure it'd be in Central Arkansas or Northwest Arkansas somewhere. You know, she does love Utah and Arizona. Now, I'm not a desert person. I like to see trees. So I think our compromise would probably be somewhere in Arkansas.
Richard, last question for you, man. I know some people, especially with the 2020 year we had, are struggling. This could be financially, this could be spiritually, emotionally, physically, whatever the ailment, whatever the case may be. This podcast is called Trusting the Process for a reason. And I think based on the journeys you've gone through, the pain, the suffering, the emotional aspects that you've gone through your life, what advice would you give to someone? It doesn't just have to be someone in sports media, but just someone that's trusting the process, something that's still making it through. What advice would you give to them?
Don't run from adversity. Learn from it. I ran from adversity when I was younger, and you know, adversity, you learn from it. It you become stronger. There's life lessons in it. Don't look at it, and don't get me wrong, you don't embrace it. You don't like. You don't say to yourself, "Oh, I want something bad to happen to me." You don't say that, but when you are faced with adversity, hit it head on, and just know through time things will get better. And you know, and we go back from we're talking about faith. My favorite biblical, my favorite scripture is James 1:2-5. It basically is talking about having faith through adversity and how you become stronger. And that's what I really relied on throughout my life, especially when I was younger, going through some times when it was I had some tough times. So just don't give up. Keep grinding and learn from your mistakes and tough times, and reach out to people that have more life experiences than you, and seek that advice. And most of the time, you know, people that you respect that have wisdom, they can help you get through those times. And I think it's easy to love life when things are going good, but like right now, I think we as a world and as a people and the human race, we're this is a reminder of just count your blessings at all time, and realize that when things are going good, embrace them, and when things are going bad, just know that things will pass, and just let it be a learning experience too. And I think as a world, and we'll look at 2020 and 2021, and think when things go back to normal, how blessed we are for normalcy. And I think I think that's something that I would focus on.
Richard, I sometimes have my parents' friends come up to me, or my friends, or just someone who's connected to my family somehow, some way, and they'd say, "Your mom, Vanessa, would be so proud of you." Richard, based on the friendship we had, based on what I've heard people say about you, nothing negative. Let me just tell you, man, your mom, Mrs. Betty Jean, is so proud of you. And we'll close it there. And I'm really appreciative of you for coming on. And, man, that was a powerful opening statement, just talking about your mom, your impact of your life. And really appreciate your time today, buddy.
Hey, buddy, appreciate you. Thanks for having me. And I appreciate your friendship.
That's going to do it for episode 1 of season 1 of Trusting the Process with Richard Davenport. We're going to continue on this season. Arkansas sports media members, make sure you're subscribed to the Hit That Line podcast network, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, and remember to always be trusting the process.
Long range! Oh! Are you kidding me?
He's got his J back, folks, and the eye of the tiger.